Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Pastor Maluleke, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Brother Zama Malote, and how are you today?
Very well, thank you. Pastor, are you well?
I'm well, and no complaints at all.
Fantastic. I hope that your day has been well spent so far.
Yes, so far so good.
Fantastic. Great to hear that. Now, one thing that simply cannot be avoided in any gathering of people is conflict. And sometimes that conflict goes so deep that it cannot be ignored or quickly dismissed. Now, in faith circles, that is normally referred to as church hurt, a feeling that the church or people in the church have caused a hurt and mishandled the fallout thereafter. So, Pastor, let's talk about people in the church who've been hurt by other members, sometimes leaders of the church, and they go out there saying the church has hurt me. How does the Bible advise such people to go about seeking a resolution? And what is the church's responsibility in such cases?
Yeah, you are correct. Yeah, to say wherever there's a group of people, you know, this thing of being hurt, it's hard to be avoided. But the Bible gives a principle in Matthew chapter 18. It gives the one who is offended the responsibility, the one who is offended, the one who is hurt, to go to the offender, you know, to approach the offender, to say, you have offended me in this manner or that manner. And so the offending party must listen and accept and then apologize. But sometimes, you know, people can be stubborn, and maybe that first person can choose to say, no, I've done nothing wrong, and I'm not apologetic, I'm not sorry. And so the Matthew 18:18 will also recommend, go, you know, Matthew chapter 18, go to the second person, you know. We're talking about the offended party here. He has one who has the responsibility to look for another person, you know, and go to the offending party, raise the matter, try to reconcile. And if that fails, then you can go to the church. And the church, you know, will call the offending party. Of course, there must be evidence, you know, presented. But the church will make a judgment. And if the offending party has been proven by evidence to have, yes, truly offended, they need to follow the counsel of the church. But if they do not, Matthew 18 counsels that, yeah, that person, you know, can be left. He can actually be disfellowshipped. Because he has not taken this counsel that has been progressive. And you know, Christ says, whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. So when the church must take, you know, this responsibility seriously, to be honest, to hear both sides of the story, to be balanced, and to be gracious also in judging matters. But it is the offending party that has the responsibility to approach. Unfortunately, in many cases, people, you know, suffer internally. They accumulate hurt and pain, resentment, bitterness, without approaching. They assume that the one who did something wrong knows. He knows. He's an adult. He's intelligent. He knows that he did something wrong. So he must come to me and apologize. Now, it doesn't. In most cases, it doesn't happen. So the offended party, has the responsibility, in terms of Matthew 18, to take the initiative. You know, Jesus took the initiative to reconcile the world unto himself. You know, he demonstrated, Romans chapter 5, verse 8, that says this is how he demonstrated his love towards us, in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. You can imagine if Christ had waited for us, you know, for people who crucified him, to go and ask for forgiveness, would he have, you know, died for us, and would he have been resurrected? You know, would have said, but I'm dying for these people, and they have not apologized to me. They have actually crucified me. But while he was dying on the cross, he says, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. So that is so the church has a responsibility, but we also need to be Christian in our attitude, even when we are offended and when we are hurt. Christ was betrayed, he was beaten, he was spat on, he was crucified, falsely accused, and yet he was able to do that. So we remember, we are the church, we are ecclesia, because we have been called out of darkness to be in his marvelous light and to proclaim his praises. So we need to be Christ-like in our attitude and in our behavior as well. Let me also go to John chapter 9. For those, you know, John chapter 9, it talks about a man who was excommunicated by the church leaders because he had been healed by Christ, made to see. He was a man born blind. And these people, because he was healed on Sabbath, you know, they wanted to him to blame Jesus for having worked on Sabbath. And this man kept saying, but this man is from God. And have you ever heard of a man being healed? You know, a man born blind being healed. It can never be. It's obvious that this man comes from God. And eventually the church leaders themselves, you know, they say, who do you think you are? You are born in sin and you think you can teach us. And sometimes church leaders behave like that, and they excommunicate you wrongfully. But Jesus Christ comes to the man and he says, do you believe in the Son of God? And the man says, who is he that I should believe in him? And, you know, Jesus says, I am the one. And then he says, I do believe. You know, he, you know, the blind man who now sees, confesses his belief in Jesus. So that's why it's important that we, when we are called out of darkness into his marvelous light, let us remember that fellowship is with God and with his Son. And as we fellowship with God and his Son, you know, through the power of the Holy Spirit, we also fellowship with one another as we fellowship with God. Because if we miss that and we want to put people in the center, we will have a problem when we are hurt. We will not take the initiative. We will want people to come to us and apologize. And even after they have apologized, we will want to reserve the right to say, okay, I can forgive or not forgive. But Jesus says, you know, forgive, you know, those who have trespassed against you, that your sins may also be forgiven in heaven. So one of the solutions to this thing is that we have Christ-like attitudes. And if we have been excommunicated, in that sense, we don't have a choice, like the man in John chapter 9, but he believes in Jesus. And that is the most important thing, that sometimes, yes, people may have power to push you out, and they can if they want to push you out unfairly. But do not, in that case, then we can say, the church has pushed me out, but God has not pushed me out. Not, I have left the church, but I have not left God. That's different. You know,
and we've had many of them. And we've had many of those.
Yes.
Now, is there ever a situation where it's better for a person to just leave the church for their own peace of mind? I mean, in light of the fact that people will tell you that I've only just left the church, but I've not left God, is there a situation that is even considered a better choice?
Well, fortunately, we are not bound. You know, church is not like a marriage where you are bound to one partner, but even in marriage, under certain conditions or circumstances, divorce can be permissible, not necessarily encouraged, but permissible, you know. So if at least if my local church is Mabopane, and if I don't feel that I am valued, I am appreciated, I'm not adding any value, I don't enjoy going to church. You know, when I wake up in the morning on a Sabbath day, it feels like a burden for me to go to church. There's a church in Soshanguve, there's a church in Mamelodi, in Pretoria North. So I'm saying, if it comes to a push, you have tried to mend the situation, you have tried to come up with solution, and it seems that it's a no-win situation. We have reached a point of intractable solutions. That means nothing ever works out. I would recommend in those situations that you transfer to another church. So that is not leaving the church, because you don't have to be a member of this particular local church. You can transfer, and the church allows it. You transfer your membership to Soshanguve Church or to Leratong Church, or, you know, and feel. And even before you transfer, you can just start by visiting multiple churches to know which one, you know, would suit you better in terms of your personality, the people that are there, the manner in which they worship, you know, is it contemporary music with drums? And, you know, sometimes you may feel uncomfortable with some things, but I'm simply saying you have many options to transfer if you have reached a point where you are like, no, it's better for me to leave the church to have a peace of mind. I've known a member who has said to me, she was working in a different province, and when she was coming back to Gauteng, to Pretoria, she said, I'm not coming back to your church because of certain reasons. You know, there's a member there. Where I come from, he was there. And, you know, he makes me feel uncomfortable because of his advances, you know, towards me. So I don't want to deal with that. So I'd rather move to a different church. So, you know, she has not left the church, but there's a problem, and she found a solution. Some people could say, no, I'm going back to my church. In fact, this is my territory. Whatever he was doing there, I will show him here. I will expose him. But this one chose to, you know, a different route and said, no, let me leave him alone. Let me go to a different church. And then life goes on. It's not a crisis.
Yeah, it actually should be then, in light of what you've just said, sad for the people who would go to the church that has got an owner or the founder, because it's now only found in one place, maybe in just Pretoria, and founded by maybe Prophet so-so and so, or Bishop so-so and so, who's been running this church. I mean, I know many such places, who has been with this place for the past 15 years, and has been really running this thing. So if you are in such a church organization, then you are in trouble.
Definitely, definitely. You are in trouble because now the man basically runs the church like his own family, his own business. You know, he calls the shots. So the Adventist system, one of the advantages of the Adventist system is that even the tithe does not go to the local church. It goes to what we call a conference, which is the storehouse, so that even ministers are paid equally or equitably, you know, from that central storehouse. So no one owns the church. But we do have situations where you will have maybe in a particular church, you know, family dynasties. Sometimes you have dominant families that have been in a particular area for a while. Yeah. They are maybe well-educated, they may be wealthy, they may be powerful. And yes, they may have those characteristics of behaving as though they own. But our faith and our belief should teach us that they do not own, even though they behave as though they own. That should give us enough strength and courage to stay. And if it doesn't change, if they are too powerful, maybe then you can transfer. So I'm agreeing with you that those who go to such denominations or congregations where you have a bishop or an archbishop who, you know, basically runs the church like his own spaza shop, I feel very sorry for those.
Yeah, man, it's unfortunate. Now, what should be the goal of church discipline when a member has fallen into sin? Is it to shame them? They bring them into the public and everybody knows that they have now sinned so that they should never do it again? What is exactly the ultimate goal of or measures such as disfellowship, censure, suspension, etc.?
Yeah, it's multifaceted. So when we deal with private matters, we should try to keep them private and then find solutions so that even if it's possible, things don't spill into the larger body of the church, so that we don't have bitterness and resentment and gossip and negativity, you know, spiraling out of control. With public offenses, it may be difficult because now we need to also retain the purity of the church and its standards. Also dealing with divisive persons, the Bible counsels us to avoid those who walk disorderly, those who, you know, cause divisions within the church, you know, keep them at a distance. But I want to read some words of Jesus that are very strong from the book of Revelation chapter 2, verse 2. And he's talking here to the church at Ephesus. And it says, to the angel of the church of Ephesus, write these things, says he holds the seven stars in his right hand, who walks in the midst of the seven golden lampstands. Verse 2, I know your works, your labor, your patience and that you cannot bear those who are evil. And you have tested those who say they are apostles and are not and have found them liars. So Jesus is commending the Ephesian church for not bearing those who are evil. So the church has got the responsibility to purge itself of those who intentionally do not want to move out of darkness into the marvelous light. And then in verse 14, now talking to the church in Pergamos, Christ says, but I have a few things against you, because you have there those who hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to put a stumbling block before the children of Israel, to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit sexual immorality. Thus, you also have those who hold the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, which thing I hate. Repent, you know, and then he goes on. But I want to show you that Christ himself, talking to the churches in the book of Revelation, mm-hmm. he commends one church for not bearing those who are evil. And then he tells the other church that you have a problem. I have a problem with you because people who come with strange doctrines, you have kept them with you. You have not dealt with them. So part of the church discipline is to approach people and talk to them. This is what the Bible teaches. This is what we believe. And if they insist on their own, you know, insist stubbornly on their own views that are contrary to what the Bible teaches, the church needs to take a stand against that. So the purpose of church discipline is first of all to keep the church and its teachings and you know, pure and not confusing, biblically accurate. But yeah, secondly, yeah, is to restore with love those who are erring, you know. And if they are admonished and if they are corrected and if they are, you know, taught and they change, then they can be restored. But if they stubbornly want to insist that they are correct against the whole body of what we believe, then the church has the responsibility, like Jesus is saying, you know, those who hold the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, the church has the responsibility to, you know, kind of disfellowship or purge itself of such believers. This is Christ speaking here. And but yeah, finally, of course, you know, from the book of Genesis, God is trying to restore. Adam falls into sin. God immediately institutes the gospel, and he says, the seed of the woman, you shall bruise his heel, he shall crush your head. God wants to restore. And, you know, we can talk about many in the Bible, even with Cain, who eventually killed his brother. God says, go and do the right thing. If you do the right thing, your offering will also be accepted. Mm. You know, to David, who had taken Bathsheba, Uriah's wife, you know, God punishes him, but God, through the prophet Nathan, says your sin has been forgiven, because he was supposed to die, you know, immediately. He was supposed to be given a capital punishment. Mm-hmm. It was not exercised. God forgave him. So the purpose of discipline is to eventually restore those who are humble enough to be teachable and to be admonished and to be corrected. But if they stubbornly refuse and they want to hold on to their you know, individual beliefs, contrary to everybody else, and they want to promote and publicize those and their differences, cause divisions and arguments in the church, the church has a responsibility to act. It's tough, but that is what Jesus is saying. You to one church, you do not bear with those who are evil. To another, I have a problem with you because you bear with those who hold the doctrines of Balaam and the Nicolaitans.
Yeah, sounds tough, but you're saying it's definitely necessary. Now, Webb, in light of what you've just said, how do we then ensure that that very discipline you're talking about is extended gracefully and with mercy?
Yeah, it must be extended gracefully and with mercy. And that's why even from Matthew 18, the approach is one person and then two people, and then we bring it to the church, you know, because that's what God always does. He says, Adam, where are you? He doesn't come accusing. He says, what have you done? Have you eaten from the tree? You know, so we need to be asking questions before we conclude. We need to investigate matters and hear from the person. Even with Cain, chapter 4, God comes to Cain and says, you know, where is your brother? You know, God asks questions. And so we need to be merciful, first of all, by not reaching judgments and conclusions prematurely without giving people or affording people an opportunity to explain their side of the story. There are always two sides to a story. So give someone a chance to explain, even when you know. I mean, God knew that Adam had sinned, Adam and Eve, but he comes asking questions. And that should teach us. You know, God speaks God had already made a judgment about Sodom and Gomorrah. Abraham comes and he purposed to be more gracious and merciful than God. He says, can you, God, the judge of all the earth, you know, that's Genesis chapter 18, verse 25, can you destroy all the city with the righteous, with the unrighteous? How can the judge of all the earth do that? And then God says, if there are 50 people there, the whole city lives. And then Abraham says, can I speak more? What if there's 40? And God says, if there's 40, everybody lives. 30, everybody lives. 20, 10, everybody lives. It means when God makes a judgment, he has already assessed the situation. So God is merciful. We need to be merciful. We need to be gracious as well. And Jesus has taught us in John chapter 8, when people came accusing the woman caught in adultery, and Jesus started writing on the ground, and those people disappear one by one. And he asked the woman, is there anyone who condemns you? And the woman says, no one condemns me. And Jesus says, neither do I condemn you, but go and sin no more. We need to apply this kind of grace, because we ourselves are human. We have imperfections, we have faults, we do commit sins against God. So we should be compassionate towards our fellow human beings. And like I said yesterday, be compassionate and be considerate without condoning the sin. Be confrontational without condemning the sinner. And that's what Jesus did. And that's the biblical approach that we need to apply when exercising discipline.
I love that, man. Be confrontational without condemning the sinner. Beautiful, beautiful stuff. Now, how do you advise a person who has been hurt, at church or maybe by the church, and they say, I've left the church, but not God? You mentioned this earlier. But what do we then say to? How do we get them back, if at all?
Yeah, first of all, let's remember Ecclesia. It is you have been called out of darkness into his marvelous light. And the church is not just a building. It is a congregation, a gathering of people who have been called out of darkness into his marvelous light. And, you know, God himself treats his church like the apple of his eye. The church, you know, in the book, the Acts of the Apostles, Ellen G. White says, the church is not yet the church triumphant. It is the church militant. It may seem as though it is going to sink, but it's not going to sink. You know, and somebody preaches a sermon and says, in Noah's ark, there were animals there. It was smelly. It was stinking. But, you know, Noah stayed in the ark. So we need to learn to stay in the ark. And Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24 and 25, I read it on Monday. Let us continue the habit of, or the practice of gathering together for worship and for fellowship. Let us not discard that this practice like others do. So to this person, I would say, remember, yes, you've been called by God, and that is the first thing, that is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. But the church also, one of the metaphors of the church is that we are an organized army. And organized armies win battles. So we are in the church to encourage one another, to build one another, to love one another, to forgive one another, to teach one another. So now when you move out of the army by yourself, you will face more challenges and more difficulties, but now you are not having the support of other brethren like you. So I would say, yes, let people exercise their consciences. But like I advised earlier, you'd rather move from this church to that, transfer membership rather than leave altogether. So I wouldn't advise that someone leaves the church completely and they say, I have left the church, but I have not left God. Because the church is actually an institution that was instituted by Christ himself when he says, on this rock, I will build my church. The church is built on the foundation that is Jesus Christ. So when we let's understand the church theologically, and even in Revelation, the church, Christ is speaking to churches, and he's saying, he's commending others for doing good things, and he's reprimanding others for the things that they do not do right. But he, and even with the Laodicean church, which represent us in this day, Christ says, stop being lukewarm. You know, he's still admonishing us with love. He's not telling us to leave the church.
Yeah.
He's telling us to change within the church. The church belongs to God himself. And the church is a vehicle by which Christ and God have planned that we should be saved. Of course, we are saved through Jesus Christ, and Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through him. But because we are human, we need human support sometimes and encouragement. The church is that vehicle. It may not be look like it's perfect. It may look like it's weak. It's about to sink, but it is still God's church. In fact, if you feel that the church is not representing Christ as it should, the one who leaves the church and says, I have left the church, I have not left God, has a responsibility to model and to exemplify to the church how Christ led by example within the church. So we don't have the liberty to leave, but we have the liberty to actually correct and rebuke and teach and encourage others.
Beautiful stuff. Pastor Maluleka, must thank you so much for your time and for joining us as always, giving us a fantastic, insights about this beautiful, beautiful subject. Thank you so much. The Lord bless you. We're going to be connecting with you once again tomorrow, same time and same place.
Thank you very much for your time. Much appreciated.
Thank
Bye.
You. Bye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.